Good evening, LSU Tiger Football Nation, in partnership with AndTheValleyShook.com. This is the Ghost Show, your original LSU podcast. On a Tuesday night coming to you. You'll hear this one either Wednesday or Thursday. But we are gearing up for the home opener against Mississippi State. We're gonna talk about that game. We're gonna break down LSU in Vanderbilt tonight. I am Kerry Munch, your host, your beloved, luscious, overweight host, but all the same, I'm still here. And with me tonight, an oldie but a goodie, welcome back, Mr. Patrick Morris.
Well, good to be back. I haven't had a chance to be on the last 2 weeks with work and everything, but man, now it feels like football season again.
You can be honest with the audience, Patrick. If anything, our audience deserves the truth, and just tell them you were playing softball. Even with a nail in your foot, I talked to you last week. You're like, I think I'm going to join a show because I don't know if I'm playing softball. I don't know if I'm playing softball with a nail in my foot. But sure enough, didn't hear from you the rest of the evening. So I figured, okay, maybe he's just kind of hanging out, taking it easy, and I'll find out over the weekend. Oh, you were playing softball with a nail in your foot. So,
I played for 2.5 innings, and then I had to sit because I couldn't go anymore.
Okay. Well, I appreciate that. But you geared up? You ready to talk a little Tiger football tonight, Pat?
Oh, yeah, because, man, that's about all. You don't really want to talk about the football themselves except for all the it's not so much the football you're talking about. It's all the extra going on around LSU football right now.
Well, the extra. What extra are you talking about?
Well, I'm referring to the, are we going to do this? Are we going to have – which coach is calling plays? Which quarterback is going to play? Who's our first, second, and third string running back going to be? You know, it's all the extra, not the actual on-the-field X's and O's anymore.
Well, that's something we're definitely going to dive into tonight. We're going to break down Vandy. To kick things off, ways to get in touch with us, as you know, if you're a longtime listener of the show and have not been to the website yet, AndTheValleyShook.com. Part of SB Nation, the number one LSU blog site out there. It's thevalleyshook.com. You can get in touch with us. You can email us. It's still the email is the same as it's always been, goshow@gmail.com. And you can Facebook us and become a friend of ours, like us, whatever it is the Facebook kids are doing these days. Join us. Be part of the growing nation of the Go Show. And looking forward to talking to you maybe through Facebook or something like that. So, that's how you get in touch with us, visit the site. People who have been listening to the show, if you have not visited the site, go visit the site, and vice versa. People who have been on the site and just discovering the Go Show, discovering this podcast, click on that Podtrac player on the left-hand side. It pulls up every show we've ever recorded that podcast's ever released because we've had some shows that have been unreleasable. But click on some archives. Go listen to some of the old shows. Listen to what we do. We have fun, but we also give strong opinions and sometimes it's based with fact, and sometimes it's based with
a lot of emotion.
Yeah, a lot of emotion. Lots of emotion. So let's kick things right off. Headlines going into this week before we break down Vandy. We know, again, D'Angelo Peterson is going to be out for this game. I say rest him as much as you can. Get him geared up for the meat of the SEC schedule because I think we're going to need him. I think he can be a valuable asset down the road. And that's really all we have on the injury front, which is good. Other than Will Blackwell's out for the season. They announced yesterday West Virginia is going to be an 8 p.m. ESPN2 game, which only means one thing for me and you, Patrick. It's going to be a long, long day.
We got to drink an extra water in between sets.
That's going to be a fun-filled day. Not often do you get a chance to play a team. You know, like West Virginia, they they're going to bring a lot of fans. It's going to be the tailgating atmosphere next Saturday on the 25th is going to be Virginia Tech-esque. It's going to be that much fun, except you're not going to have game day on the parade grounds, which that's fine by me. I don't care about that. But still, you're going to have a lot of West Virginia people around, and they're going to be wanting to soak up the whole Louisiana atmosphere and see what it's all about. So we're going to make sure we have a good time with them, and I'm sure we're going to play a game of flip flop or two with some of the West Virginia fans. I would imagine so. So that's pretty much it. It's headlines. I think I'm forgetting one thing, maybe. Oh, and of course, this Saturday, roughly around 9 a.m., we're going to be streaming live for the first time in this 2010 football season podcast. We're going to do the webcam again this year. Podcast and listening. You must be away from the.
Sorry, you caught me off guard there for a little bit. We're going to bring the whole We're going to bring the Roll Kick Caboodle out there again. This could be great.
Sweet. So that's live. That's live audio and video Saturday morning.
Website. As long as our connection holds up, as it were. You know how well it worked last year.
Well, we actually had a good year last year as far as that connection out there.
Arrangements are being made. Don't worry about it.
Worst comes to worst, we'll bring the laptop Connect card out there, and we won't have to worry about getting Wi-Fi access on LSU's campus. So we'll figure that out. So that's something to look forward to: live audio and video, assuming everything works right. Technically. So looking forward to that. But let's dive right into what transpired on Saturday night before we break. Before we get into Mississippi State, LSU Vanderbilt. LSU opens the SEC season on the road in Nashville, 27-3, very sluggish first half. LSU, I think it was 10-0 at halftime. Defense was phenomenal, albeit against Vandy, but still as dominant a defensive performance as I've seen in probably 5 years. So it was very refreshing to see that. I don't care who we play. We didn't play like that last year against them, so. I mean, so just phenomenal. Hats off to the defense. I mean, great game. And then second half, we kind of got in gear a little bit. Started to wear down the Vandy defense a little bit. Started opening up some holes and kind of won the game going away 27-3. So, Patrick, I'll open up with you. Your initial thoughts about the game as a whole, and then I'll offer my opinion. Then we'll get into the game a little bit more. Dive into it a little bit more. So. Initial thoughts opening the season 1-0 in conference.
Well, initial thoughts, like you said, it is you like it or not, Vanderbilt is an SEC team. It is on the road in the SEC. Granted, we probably had as many fans there as they did. But, that being said, defense, yeah, they played well. They did what they were supposed to do against an outmatched Vanderbilt team. I mean, that is what you're supposed to do. If you're going to be a dominant defense, you've got to shut down the teams you're supposed to shut down and make them look real bad. They did that. Now, the other half of the team, the other 50%, very disappointing. You're supposed to make your biggest strides, and everybody says it, every coach in the world wouldn't say that you make your biggest strides from week one to week two if that wasn't supposed to be the case. Well, one half the ball we did, the other half the ball I think we took, strides backwards. To go up there on the offensive side of the ball and do what we did, eventually it wore them down because we're bigger. We're stronger, we're faster, we have better talent. But that is, it's 27-3, but we should have won that game by at least 40-something. I mean, granted, it's just frustrating is what it is.
Yeah, and let's not sugarcoat anything. It's the strides backwards that were made Saturday at the quarterback position. Let's not sugarcoat anything. I'm not blaming Jordan Jefferson. I'm not calling Jordan Jefferson out or anything like that, but he had a poor game. Now,
hell with that. Somebody's got to call him out.
Yeah, well, you call him out. Let's do that then. We'll go ahead and call Jordan Jefferson. You've been called out by the Gosha.
Because
he regressed.
Sure as hell doesn't.
Yeah, he regressed. He had a bad game. Now, this is the trend that we've seen from him. We saw it all last year. I mean, last year was his first full year as a starter. He played solid at times. He played bad at times. And yesterday, Saturday, was an example of the worst of times. He was 8-for-20, I think, passing 96 yards, interception. Did he throw an interception Saturday?
I mean, I'm just looking for a little consistency. That's really the main thing that we're looking for out of a quarterback. Consistency would be nice. You come and light the world on fire with you throw a pass against North Carolina, 50 yards on a rope in the air to your receiver. You come back the next game, you can't hit a little 10-yard out to Russell Shepherd when he's got nobody within 10 yards of him. Consistency would be nice. That is how you win in the SEC. Look at the Alabamas of the world right now. Look at us when we were on top of the heap. Consistency at quarterback, that is all you need.
Yeah, what I'm seeing from him is he's waiting way too long to get rid of the football. And then on top of that, add to that, he's waiting to get, like you saw some, I'm trying to find my words there. Case in point, the swing pass is out to Russell Shepherd. The ball needs to be released a full second before he's releasing the ball. So he's not getting rid of the ball in time. and he's waiting so long to the point that I guess he's feeling like he has to rush it, and he's underthrowing, he's overthrowing, his feet aren't set, which makes me either low pass or high pass.
Right, look at that play. That's a design play to Russell Shepard. That's not even a check down. That's
right.
That wasn't even a check down.
I mean, that snap, one step drop, boom. I mean, that should all happen in 1.5 seconds. I mean, snap, step back, throw. I mean, it's taken 2.5-3 seconds for it to develop, and it's just, and that's allowing defenses to get to him, and when they do complete the pass, we're not getting any yards out of it because either our blockers have already been out in front, they've already trying to go downfield and create more blocks or what have you, but it's allowing defenses to react a lot quicker to it than what they would if we were doing that, you know, pretty quickly, and that's a problem that needs to be addressed now. On the other side, I don't want to be negative about the whole thing because there were some positives to take away from this game. Now, we saw an offensive line. First of all, we saw an offense. And, Pat, I don't know if you listened to Hannah Griff and Gordy Rush on 98.1 after the game, but Hannah Griff basically put it out there, and he's not sugarcoating anything, and he works for the LSU Sports Radio Network. But this is what Les Miles wants to do. He wants to power run. He wants to wear down the team's defense. And that's how he wants to win football games, and I'm
Big
okay
Ten
with that.
I'm
really okay. We're a Big Ten team playing in the SEC conference as far as offense goes. Now our defense is quick and pursues to the ball like an SEC defense should. But our offense is very vanilla, but it's power football and it can work. It very much can work because if we can do the things that we need to do to improve our running game offensively, and that means line that ball up under center, eye formation, a tight end, two tight ends, and quit running this fancy pistol, you know, let's try to snap the ball on a shotgun and do things and get the ball out in the open field with a running back. Let's line up and play smash mouth football because I think that's what I think we're good at it. I mean, our offensive line is young, but I think they can develop.
But with a young offensive line, that's the best way to go sometimes is, all right, here's your guy. He's right in front of you. Knock him off the ball. Here he comes. You don't have to worry about switching out on pass blocking. You don't have to worry about, okay, who's going to take the inside guy? Who's got the outside guy? Is the back going to pick him up? You don't have to worry about all that. If you're running the ball straight up, it's man on man. I'm bigger than you. Let's go.
Right, and that's what we need to do to win football games. And, you know, if we can continue to do that, as far as running the ball, we need to have better quarterback play to take advantage of the explosiveness that we have on offense, and that's getting Russell Shepard involved with the end arounds and things like that. And if you're pounding the ball up the middle and you're getting yards off tackle and up the gut, 5-6 yards a pop, you know, those teams are going to start collapsing, you know, towards the middle. That'll open things up for Russell Shepard on the outside. That'll allow for some good play-action passes down the field. And, we saw it, you know, the first half against North Carolina with the one throw to Reuben Randall at the end of the half. So, you know, we know Jordan Jenkins can make the throws, but it's the consistency, which brings me to my next point. Before I get to that, I mean, the running back play as a whole I thought was better. I mean, we didn't put the ball on the ground. The running back did anyway. I think if memory serves me correctly, I think it was we had the one bad pitch on the option.
Yep.
I think Alfred Blue took his eyes off the ball, but after
yep.
that he righted the ship. He didn't put the ball on the ground the rest of the day. He had a nice game. He scored a touchdown. Stephen Ridley is clearly our number one running back. He showed to me, I think, the biggest improvement from week one to week two. He didn't fumble. He saw the hole. He sees a hole, and he sees the hole. He cuts back. And he has good vision. I mean, he's got some of the best vision I've seen in LSU running back in the last few years as far as being able to read a block and get into the hole. You know, Charles Scott was more of a power guy. He was just gonna ram into you. Keelan Williams had problems kind of finding holes and things like that and getting yards like that. But Stephen Ridley has shown some nice progress there. What's your thoughts on him?
Yeah, I mean, I like it. Somebody was talking about it on the radio the other day. He's got a little bit of that size and power to him, but he's also got that burst once he gets through there. You know, and that's the whole key to getting your big gainers is, you know, yeah, you can knock somebody off, but once you get that initial line knocked off, can you have that burst to get away from him? Do you have the strong legs? And it appears that he does, coming through that line the way he's running, has a strong power in the legs and keeps them turning the entire time, and that's the whole key. Now, it may get you in trouble once or twice, as we saw in the first game with the fumbles, you know, because, that, you know, it happens in NFL, it happens in college, it happens in high school. The more yardage you're trying to get, you know, sometimes you're going to get that fumble as you're trying to fight for that extra yard. And it, that just comes with experience. You got to know when you got to get down and when you can try and bust that big one. But, yeah,
you got to know how to protect the ball, too. So
exactly. You know, and that's going to come, you know. But I do like the fact that they are, you know, they think they found a running back and they're actually staying with the running back for most of the game. They're, you know, they're giving him his breathers and they're giving, you know, some fresh legs in there with Murphy and Blue and whatever. But, you know, I like the fact that, okay, you're our guy. Let's go. You know, let's ride the horse, in other words. Because, we, you know, we got to find a horse on offense that we can say, rally behind, I need a tough yard, you're going to be my guy. Or, you know, I'm looking for a big play, Shepard, you're my guy. Or, you know, because we definitely can't do it from the passing game. So that's right now we have two options on offense. One is pound the ball up the gut and then tighten up that defense and then get the speed on the outside with Russell Shepard once you do that.
Yeah, because you can't give Russell Shepard enough touches. And that's And let's segue back into the quarterback situation, because I want to talk about that real quick before we move into Mississippi State and talk about that game a little bit. Honestly speaking, Patrick, do you think we're a good quarterback away from being a national championship contender?
I think we're a consistent quarterback away from being a national championship contender.
Okay.
If you look, and the whole key to that is look at your wide receivers. Don't necessarily look at the quarterback. Look at the, I guess you'd say, I want to say emotion or the
body line.
The faces of the wide receivers.
You saw when he threw the interception in the end zone, you saw on the replay Russell Shepard's head just go down because he knew, not only did he know it was a wasted opportunity, but they're losing
like,
confidence.
Come on.
They're
you know, it's
confidence.
Like they're waiting for the quarterback to step up. The quarterback's supposed to be your leader. He's not a leader. He's a player. He's an Aaron Brooks is what he is. Basically, to me right now, he's Aaron Brooks.
Yeah.
In a nutshell. You look at Reuben Randall and Tolliver out there. They can get open, but you know what? They're getting more and more frustrated as we go along. If you look at them at the beginning of the game, because I looked at a replay of the game, and they're running routes hard. They're cutting. They're looking to get open. But then again, the quarterback's not seeing them. They're not getting them the ball. He's not even attempting to get them the ball. So toward the end of the game, you know what? They're just like, all right, you know, I'm going to make my cut, but I know I'm not getting the ball in it. You can see the mannerisms and the receivers, they kind of get that letdown going. The more it's just infectious at that point. You've got to get somebody that at least gives them a chance to get the ball in their hands.
Right, and that brings me to what has been, I guess, the hot topic at the beginning of the week so far. Should he start, but should Jared Lee see some action Saturday night, and should he see action regardless of how Jordan Jefferson's playing, or should he see action if Jordan Jefferson comes out and lays a couple of duds in the first couple of series of the game? What's your opinions on Jared Lee at this point?
It's hard to say because you don't know how the kid's going to react. I mean, he's been through thick, through thin, through whatever. But the one thing you do have to say about Jared Lee, yeah, he throws a pick six. But if you look by numbers, go look at numbers alone, just based on numbers. Other than the pick sixes, which if you go back and look at the pick sixes, you had like three or four of the pick sixes off of receivers' hands. Now, granted, he threw some on the outs that were just, you know, to the other team. But
right. Look
at the numbers he put up besides that. Then you're comparable with some other SEC quarterbacks, you know, that are there. He's got the arm. Well, there's no doubt he's got the arm, you know. And then to me, he from what – if you got to take credence in what the coaching staff and everybody says – he has the offense. He knows the playbook. How long he's been in the system now? You know, so they say he's got the smarts. It's processing the smarts on the quick. It's like the game. It's almost like he's got to play enough for the game to the speed of the game to get used to the speed of the game. You know,
yeah.
So my opinion is I think Jordan Jefferson, he comes out, lays an egg. Miles doesn't have a choice but to put Lee in and Sid Jefferson and let him have a peek from the sidelines.
Yeah.
Now, do I think whether Jefferson's hot, I think, yeah, you need to let him play a little more because he needs that confidence. You know, with a guy like Jefferson, he's a street player. He's got to get that if he gets confidence, he keeps going. If he's down in the dumps like he is now, he could just keep spiraling down. But regardless of that, Lee's got to see some playing time this weekend. He has got to, just for the simple fact you're in the SEC and you're going to keep running Jordan Jefferson, Lee's got to get some snaps.
Yeah, well, Les Miles keeps talking about he's a guy that's we were talking about this off air before we started about all these little things that Les Miles has, and he always talks about Jared Lee as how he's competing in practice. He says things like, if we're going to win, we need Jared Lee, things like that. Now, they kind of lead you to believe that Jared Lee's going to see some playing time. Then he says something on a total spectrum of that as far as, you know, somebody asked him if Jared Lee was going to see the field Saturday, and he kind of shrugged that off a little bit. So it's weird how he says one thing and then comes back and says another thing about whether or not Jared Lee's going to see the playing field. I think he's just kind of, that's just coach speak a little bit. I think if Saturday night showed anything, I think he is going to have the quick finger with is that the right terminology?
He's going to have the quick hook. I mean, he's
tight rope.
He's going to have
Jordan Lee, a short leash is what I'm looking for with Jordan Jefferson. And you know, I think it's I'm completely torn because the last time we saw Jared Lee. I mean, he came in and threw one pass against Vanderbilt and completed it. Okay, good job. But the last time we saw him in a pressure situation was against Alabama, and we all know how that turned out. He didn't throw an interception or anything. He came close, but no pass he threw in that game. And if we made a podcast, I was trying not to make another Alabama reference because every show we've had an Alabama reference, a 2009 Alabama game reference, but for purposes of this conversation, we have to use it because it's the last sample of Jared Lee that we've seen in a competitive game was that game. And he didn't look the part and didn't play the part in that game. And that's one thing. That's my last image of him. That's all I can say.
Okay, let's look at it like this. The first game Jared Lee ever got in, well, really in any kind of way, shape, or form was what? Was that Auburn a couple years ago?
That Auburn game when Andrew Hatch went out with a concussion, yeah.
Okay. So you're in a big game to start, okay? That's his first ever game at LSU, so to, you know, in any kind of big way, shape, or form. He's never had in my opinion now, yeah, you can come back from that and play small guys, but he's never had a chance to build from the start of a season. You know, you play your cupcake guy. Let's get a little confidence. Let's let this be, you know, because you know when you play in the McNeese's or whatever the world, you got a chance. Competition's not quite as fast as it is when you get to the SEC. So you're building up to that speed of the SEC as you're going along. That's kind of why you play almost a preseason type of schedule a lot of times in the SEC, because you're getting ready for that and you're getting more and more comfortable in the pocket. He doesn't have a chance to do that. I mean, I'm defending the guy right now. He doesn't have a chance to do that. If we play him this week, okay, you're in your first home game. You're two games into the season already. The other guys had just about every snap at quarterback. Now you're expected to come in and just perform miracles. The thing they got to impress upon him, if he does play, look, I don't want you to do miracles. I just want you to be the leader and control the offense.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, I hear you on that, and I'm all for it. I'd like to see him redeem himself. I really would. I mean, he said he's had such a tormented career here at LSU that, you know, you're pulling for the kid because you don't want to see anybody.
We actually owe him in a way because that kid could have left 2 years ago. Just think where we'd be in a quarterback situation now.
Exactly. He could have transferred out of here. And yeah, think about where we'd be. You're right. Let's see. I mean, let's see what happens. I mean, I'd like to see him. I mean, it goes to how the game's kind of going. And, you know, let's see what Jordan Jefferson comes out and does. And, you know, I expect Mississippi State to put all 11 guys in the box and just dare us to throw the football, because I don't think anybody in the country watches us. We're 107th in the nation in passing, by the way. I'm looking at that stat right now. We're
How many times have we thrown the ball past 20 yards?
I can think of three times. I can think of a pass to Ruben Randle.
Attempted a pass to past 20 yards.
I can count them on one hand.
Exactly.
I can say five or six times. Three come to mind right away, but, you know, other than that, you know, I'm sure there's a few that I'm not thinking about. But, you know, it's kind of wait and see. So we'll kind of close the book on Vanderbilt. Like I said, we can't talk enough. Let's kind of close it. Talk about the defense real quick, then we'll kind of get into Mississippi State. Defensively, six sacks in the game, Pat. When's the last time that's happened? I think you got to go back
to the days with Dorsey and everybody else.
Yeah, it's either going back to when Bo Pelini was there, when Muschamp was there with Saban. We lead the nation in sacks right now. Parkett looked at that stat for me before the show. Thank you, Parkett. 10 sacks on a season already in 2 games. We had 21 all year last year, which is, I can't believe we had 21. I thought we had somewhere like in the teens. Because I don't never remember our sacking quarterback last year. I mean, I thought it was like 8, you know. I'm thinking at least, maybe it was a few misses, maybe like 12. I never thought it was 21. But we're on pace to catch our sack total from last year in 3 games. So, you know, this trend of things is going to continue. I don't see anything slowing down. What you were talking about, improvement from week 1 to week 2, we saw it immensely with the defense. We saw it with the corners who got beat on some long throws against UNC. Now, granted, Vanderbilt's passing game, Vanderbilt's quarterback is much on the level of ours right now. But we're still, we're seeing outstanding penetration by the defensive line. Ryan Baker back at linebacker is going to help us immensely. We're pursuing to the ball like I haven't seen in years. I mean, it's like somebody stated last week after the North Carolina game, we're talking about missed tackles. But what you saw last year when we missed a tackle was nobody around the ball carrier. Now if you see a guy miss a tackle, there's still 3 or 4 other guys to get him. Tackle him. And that's what you see with this defense. And it's just – I think we can continue to build off this, and if we continue to improve, if we can show some improvement on offense. And I think we've taken the steps in the running game. I think we're going to become that power running team again, and stop all this pistol and all this other crap that I can't stand.
Well, you know, another thing you see on the defense, you see that this is Chavis's show. You're not going to Les Miles. I mean, yeah, he may every now and then try and have some input, but this is Chavis's mantra. This is his deal. He's getting paid big money to basically run that half of the team, and you know, I can almost see him saying, look, I got this, Miles, step away, and that's what he did. You know, you can see that he has his stamp. He is doing his thing. And the one thing that tells me that is, look at the amount of young players he's putting on the field.
Right.
That tells me in a nutshell, this is my stuff. If they're going to make a mistake, it's on me. But you know what? He's the only coach out there, besides Gonzalez, of course, that gets on him.
Mm-hmm. And that bodes well for the future, too. He playing young guys and getting young guys in-game experience, you can't say enough about, you know, what that does for their confidence and their learning ability, you know, going forward. And I think that's the way you build a program. That's the way you build a dynasty, is you recruit young guys. You go in every year, you have these top 5 recruiting classes. You can't be scared to play them as true freshmen, because that's the only way they're going to learn. It's the only way they're going to learn. You can't just let them sit on a bench and, you know, you got to get them some in-game experience, you know, especially on defense, you know, on that side of the ball, when you can rotate guys in and out, and, you know, you coach them up and you do good things with them. And we got some, you know, our defense right now, I hope it continues on its pace, because we're doing really well, so... It's got me excited. It's got me really excited.
You know what? Sometimes young guys, they don't need to think. You just need to put them out there and let them play the game. And that can relate to the offensive side of the ball. Sometimes you just put the players out there and let them use their natural talent and let them just play the game. Don't overcomplicate it. You know, defensively, look, this is your guy. Don't let anybody get behind you on defense. And when the ball comes up past that line, you tackle somebody. Simple as that.
Exactly. And speaking of defense, I think you're going to see a lot of it as we segue pretty smoothly into the LSU-Mississippi State game. Thank you very much. 6 p.m. ESPN U. Back on to you in Tiger Stadium. Let's see. Mississippi State's 1-1. They lost to Auburn. They beat the pants out of – beat the snot out of Memphis in week 1. They lost to Auburn on Thursday night last week, 17-14 in the game that they had a chance to win at the end. They could not get anything going offensively. It was – that game mirrored what I watched with Baltimore and New York, the Jets, last night. That game was similar as far as the offenses, neither offense being able to do a lot. But what Mississippi State does well is they play good defense. And I got to imagine their game plan, I talked about it just a few seconds ago, and let's dive into it here. I got to imagine their game plan is going to be load the box, force LSU to complete some passes downfield, and let's see what happens. You know,
we're going to have to hit some big plays. Bottom line, we've got to hit some big plays. We've got to hit some 25, 30-yard plays in the passing game. We cannot rely on a 5-yard pass because they're going to be there. They're going to be there, and they're going to expect that to be coming.
We've got a good vertical.
You know, just one time I'd like to see a pump fake and a go.
Yeah. And that's something we need to, I think that's something we need to do. We need to do, you know, against them, what we need to do offensively is like you said, we gotta open it up early because we know, I mean, me and you were talking about it right now, so I got to think the coach has got to know that's what Mississippi State is going to do defensively because I think that's the only way they have a chance to win this football game is to maybe create something defensively to set their offense up in good positions because their offense is very inept. I watched them against Auburn, and Auburn doesn't have a solid defense. They didn't have one last year, and I don't think they're going to have a great one this year, and they could not do anything. They do they run a two-quarterback system. One's more the passer, and the other guy is the runner, and you know, and it's very it's spread. Dan Mullen's still trying to incorporate that philosophy. In Mississippi State, he's got to get the athletes there to do it. You know, that's their game plan is to try to force us into some mistakes and set up their offense with some good field position. I think that's their mantra for to try to win this football game. Would you agree?
Oh, without a doubt. Without a doubt, you know, if I don't see anything but that, I will be very surprised.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'll sit in the stands with you. In fact, I'll even give you the beer I'm going to bring into the stadium.
Okay. We're sneaking beer in this week?
Yeah, what the hell?
Okay. That's fine by me. I don't mind sneaking beer. I've never done it. But, you know, I can handle it.
Well, we'll give it to Marvin.
Okay. That works for me. You made me lose my track of thought now. I'm all focused on football. Saturday's supposed to be our fun talking about Deer Show, and I'm trying to be serious here, and then you start talking about Sneaking Panther today, and you got me all excited, and I'm already excited about Friday night.
Well, I'm excited because it's finally with the weather. I woke up this morning, you know, well, after I took the dog out at 3 in the morning, of course, you know, and the weather was like 65 degrees, and I'm waking up like, yeah, this is football weather. Then you get on, I got a Go Show going on, you know, tonight you got our first tailgate of the season. We got a big Friday night plan. You know everything. It's time. Let's get this show rolling. Maybe that'll kickstart LSU. Maybe because we've been on the road 2 weeks, you know, so to speak. Maybe they were waiting to get home before we unleashed the dog. Look, I'm gonna be a positive person. I'm gonna say I hope that Jordan Jefferson comes out and lights the world on fire and says, okay, this is, you know, I've heard he's got to be hearing it too. You know, these guys don't live in a bubble. He's got to hear it every day that he's, you know, he's not doing the job. He's doing this, doing that. Hopefully he's hearing it from the coaches, and hopefully that hopefully he's not one of those guys that just shells up when he hears stuff like that. I hope it lights a fire under his butt. If not, I hope that we're able to go to Jared Lee as a backup, and I hope he does well. You know, either way, we need two solid quarterbacks the way we try and run our quarterback anyway.
Yeah, right, and hopefully kind of scrap some of that too. But no, like in LSU offensively, that's what needs to happen. We got to hit some big plays early. We got to do something to stretch the field a little bit, because I think we can, you know, I think we can wear this defense down much like we did against Vanderbilt. I think, you know, I think we can, you know, do some things, and you know, hopefully, you know, by third or fourth quarter, we kind of wearing them down much like we did against Vanderbilt, and we can try to pull away. That's gonna be the mantra for the whole season, and you know, it starts, you know, Saturday night. We got to continue to improve in that area, and you know, there's not really much more to talk about what we need to do offensively because it's pretty cut and dry. I mean, it's right there, you know.
Let's put them on the field, get to the next game. Let's see how much improvement we're gonna make. Let's actually see what the coaching staff, since you know they'll never let on what they're gonna do. You know, let's see what's gonna happen because God knows it's a crapshoot.
Yeah, you're right, and you definitely want to get the ball in number 10's hands as much as possible. I gotta imagine that they're sitting watching film right now, the coaching staff, and just looking for different ways to get him the ball. I mean, even if you got to run him, you know, in between the tackles every once and again, you know, just to kind of make Mississippi State think about it, and maybe even hit somebody else on the end around, like a Reuben Randall or a Tolliver or a, you know, Spencer Ware, you know, getting everybody involved in a.
Well, what you do is you get Russell Shepard running the end around and have him do the handoff coming to the guy going around because everybody's going to pursue Shepard thinking
he's going to go. Yeah, the old school reverse.
Exactly.
Really, you don't see that a lot in the old, with everybody adopting the spread offense. You see a lot of just end around. You don't see the old school reverse stuff.
I mean, I guess it's going to be a wait and see thing to this weekend. We're really not going to know. You know, the coaches aren't going to let on. Everybody's going to be talking. I mean, you're going to have the people out there that are going to say, you know, Jared, you're going to have people walking around campus saying, Jared Lee starting this and that. There's going to be so many rumors flying around. But, Kerry, your honest opinion to kind of close it down on the offense, what's the over-under or at what point of the game do you think, honestly, just gut feeling, that Jared Lee, if he gets in the game?
This is based off of how I think Jordan Jones is going to come out.
Or, even for that matter, does he even start?
No, he's not. I don't think he starts. It's too early to pull. Yeah, I don't think he starts. I don't think we're going to. I don't think it's gotten that drastic yet. I mean, and Jordan Jefferson isn't, you know, he's played terrible at times. He's played decent at times. It's not to the point to where we're talking about replacing him as a star. But the way I see this game unfolding, I see it pretty much unfolding like I see last week's game a little bit. But realistically, middle of second quarter maybe, or start our first possession of the second quarter. If it's 0-0 and we've had three possessions in the first quarter and we've got 28 total yards and they're all rushing yards, you're gonna see Jared Lee first series or second quarter. In my opinion.
Yeah, I think you're right. If we go, you know, those first couple series and you see the same thing where Jefferson misses, he misses a pass, that he should hit or something like that, and the first time you see him kind of. Or the other players on the team start to kind of look to that question, even if it's in the first two series and they go 3-and-out, I think at that point you definitely see Jared Lee at that point. Now, if he completes a couple passes, I still think you see Jared Lee after about, after about the third series. So I'm right with you. I think after about the third series, you do it to give the team a lift if they need a lift. Now, if we're on fire, that's the one exception. If we're on fire and we're scoring on every play, we're hitting the big plays, Jefferson's going to keep playing until that second half, bottom line.
Okay, yeah. I agree. Okay, let's switch gears to over the defensive side of the ball. We already talked about, a little bit about what they do offensively. They run a two-quarterback system. Let me pull their stats up from the Auburn game, or actually for the whole season. Tyler Russell is more of their drop-back passer. They have a guy, Chris Ralph, I think his name is. I think his first name is Chris.
I was just watching the highlights. That's what they were showing,
yeah,
Chris Ralph.
He's more of he's a run-pass option guy. He's actually he's the starter. He's a starting quarterback. He's got more pass attempts. He's, I think, fourth on the team in rushing. They got a triple-headed monster. None of their running backs are. Their running backs have run for, let's see, Vic Ballard, 73 yards rushing in two games, 67 by Ladarius Perkins, 53 by Robert Elliott. Then Ralph is fourth with 46, and most of that I think is inflated because of the Memphis game because they could not do anything against Auburn. I don't have their stats for Auburn pulled up, but one of the touchdowns they scored was on a short field as well. Off of I can't remember if it was an onside kick they recovered or they got a turnover. There were so many different things that happened in that football game, and I was switching back and forth between that and the Saints game all night. That's what they do on offense. Like I said, Dan Mullen's still trying to incorporate his philosophy and get his guys in place. You think back to last year in Starkville, we were within a Chad Jones miracle play of losing that football game. We're at home this year, but from what I saw from Saturday, I don't imagine our defense having that big of a problem stopping them and playing the same way they did against North Carolina for three quarters and playing the way they did against for the whole game against Vanderbilt.
No, but I do look for them to come out with a couple of wrinkles in their system, given the fact that we are prone to a big play giving up every now and then.
Yeah, I think they might have tagged downfield.
Yeah, I look for them to come up with some kind of wrinkle where they, some not you know, not a a simple play action pass, but, you know, something where they really draw the defense up, maybe even a flea flicker type of play where, you know, our guy comes up and they burn us once on that, on something like that. I do look for something like that to happen early, try and take the crowd out of it, because, you know, first game in Tiger Stadium of the year, it's going to be, you know, no matter who you're playing, it's the first game in Tiger Stadium of the year.
You know, and a guy to watch for as far as passing game, Chad Bumpus, nine receptions, 134 yards. He's got two receiving touchdowns. That's that lead that's actually tied for the team lead with another guy, Brandon Heaven. So they actually have two guys that are kind of leading the way for him offensively, receiving. You know, that I agree with you wholeheartedly about that. They're gonna come out with a couple of wrinkles. They're going to look to do something early. You know, they're going to rely on their defense, trying to set them up with good offensive field position. I think they're also going to try to come out and do something, you know, offensively. I imagine them, if they looked at game film against UNC, trying to figure out a way to get to exploit something downfield in our secondary, because that's where we are the most vulnerable with so many young guys playing. So
Yeah, and they're gonna, and like I say, they're just playing ball. They're going after the ball, but yeah, that's where the benefit of our defensive coordinator comes in, is, you know, improvements game one to game two. They didn't get burnt deep. Game three, you know, they're starting to get that, the system, the young players are starting to get the system down and just react instead of thinking about where they need to be now. So, I mean, I still think we're just going to, I hope, and I almost, you know, got this feeling, we're just going to continue on the upswing on the defensive side of the ball. You know, it's just a hope that the offense catches up to them.
Yeah. And put it to you this way, this, Mississippi State's not going to win this game running football. They're going to have to do some things. They're going to have to do some creative things offensively.
Exactly.
So let's talk about the third phase there. I guess the big question is does Mississippi State have a rugby-style punter?
Well, I did not see him rugby-style punt against Auburn, did you? Of course, I didn't watch the entire game.
We're going to bring in our rugby punting expert on Saturday into the show, Stalvin Marvin. He is our rugby punting guru. Listen, if you want to tease the Saturday show, that's the way to do it. You bring in a rugby.
What we're going to do is we're going to have Marvin rugby punt, and we're going to have Podcat back there receiving punt.
I think we ought to get video of this and demonstrate to our audience what a rugby punt looks like. So when a game comes up, we can see just how wrong Marvin is in his assessments, which he tends to be.
Of course, he will think that he's absolutely right on Saturday, right after about 10 o'clock, 10:30 in the morning.
Oh, yeah. I don't know if I want to see him after 11 o'clock, 12 o'clock, because I'm sure he'll be in wrath, Stalvin Marvin. I'm drunk, and I'm going to punch Kerry in the stomach, trip the car and for him. But, you know.
But anyway, back to the game, because we'll talk about that on Saturday.
Well, let's go. Well, I think we've broken down the game. We're going to do some picks. We still do picks. We got a lot more games to pick than we did in the past. So it's the way we've been doing it, Pat. I'll bring Podcast back in if he's listening. Podcast's going to run through the games that we do. Anybody listening to the show the first time, you can still join in and have some fun with us. We have set up on theandofvalleyshow.com as a basically it's a bracket. I think we got like 70 people participating. In a pick'em contest, it's picked against the spread. It's like 14, 15 games every week, and you can join up with that just fine. I think Podcast posts the link. I think every Wednesday.
Yeah, about every Tuesday. Last week had to be delayed a little bit because they had, you know, games all the way into Monday. But the post for this week is up. Before we get into the picks, I want to talk briefly about how well everybody's doing so far this year. As far as this, you know, there's a lot of random folks on the site who are doing pretty well. As far as folks, you know, like Gosho or End of Valley Ship Riders are going, me and Cody are tied with a bunch of people in 15th place, and then it's a long descent to the bottom where we find Poser and Yu Wee and JJ and. It's not looking good early in the season so far.
I was 5-9 in week two, and I was 8-7 in week one. So that's 13 and 16. So yeah, not a good.
Yeah, you're tied with a bunch of people in 54th place. So
yeah, I need to step my game up there a little bit. So
Well, Kerry, the way I like to look at it is, since I was kind of leading last year, I like to say I'm just setting them up this year, making them feel better about themselves, and now we're going to turn on the juice. Kind of like
Ellie. You're not doing too bad, Pat. You're with a bunch of other folks who are tied along with Marvin in 25th place. So
this early in the season,
there's a lot of folks in the same position just because there's not enough time for everybody to separate yet. But it's not looking good early on so far.
Oh,
for
I'm
going to
make
the
run. You don't worry about it. The run's coming.
Okay.
I'm trying to pull up the site because I haven't picked my games yet, so I guess I need to.
I haven't either.
Damn.
Is there a Thursday night game this week?
Let me go ahead and make that announcement. This week we don't have a Thursday night game. I think the Thursday night game this week is like Cincinnati at some Pac-10 team or something like that. It's a pointless game that I really didn't feel like putting on the spread anyway. So the picks this week are due Saturday before kickoff at noon. So we'll have plenty of time to for everybody to think about their picks. If you're ready, I'm going to go ahead and get started with the games that we've got.
Yeah, go ahead.
All right. All right, first one up on the list, and this is in no particular order, it seems, so just go with it. First one is Arizona State at 11th-ranked Wisconsin. Both teams undefeated. Wisconsin is a 14.5-point favorite at home.
And Wisconsin, 14 points. There's so many points. And in an interconference battle like that, you just never know. But real quickly, just to make a pick, I don't think Wisconsin's high-powered enough on offense to cover that 14.5 points. So I'm going to go with Arizona State to cover.
Okay, well, I'm going to have to disagree with you there because Wisconsin at home, they have a great home atmosphere. They can, they're going to make a couple big plays. They're a little different this year than they have been in the past. So I'll go with Wisconsin to cover.
Okay.
All right, next one is pretty much a bellwether for both of these SEC teams. Arkansas, ranked 12th, travels to Georgia, who just got beat by Marvin's Dark Horse for the SEC East, South Carolina last weekend. Despite all that you think about Arkansas being ranked and Georgia being unranked and with a loss, Georgia is a 2-point favorite at home.
And I totally agree with that one, every way, shape, and form. Georgia played so freaking bad last week. I mean, not to say that they shouldn't have lost anyway, even if they had played well. But Georgia at home, he's got to win this game. It's almost a must-win for Rick just to kind of quell some of the I'm going to get rid of you mid-season rumors. So, yeah, he's going to win the game, and I think Arkansas is, like you said, way overrated.
This is a sucker bet for Vegas. Everybody's going to jump on Arkansas, and Vegas is going to rack up. I agree with you, Patrick. Georgia.
All right. Next one, Brigham Young, recently demolished by Air Force at home last week, travels to Florida State, who was destroyed on the road at Oklahoma last week. Florida State is a 9.5-point favorite at home.
I'm going to go with the Noles. They've got to be smart and pretty good from that ass-whooping they took from Oklahoma. So they're going to come out and they're going to play much better football. They're going to beat a very mediocre BYU team by at least two touchdowns.
Yeah, I have to say they're going to win by at least two touchdowns, not necessarily because of the Noles offense, but because their defense is so much faster than BYU's offense is going to be, and they're going to have at least two scores on defense. So the Noles easily.
All right, moving on. Clemson, nice little ACC-SEC game. Clemson travels to Auburn. This is actually where game day is going this week, so, we'll be. Auburn is a 6.5-point favorite at home. Both teams are undefeated.
This is interesting. I don't know if Auburn can generate enough offense here. They're getting better.
Don't think Cam Newton can do it?
I don't know. They didn't do it against Mississippi State. Mississippi State's got a pretty decent defense now. I haven't seen Clemson play yet this year. 6.5 at home. The ACC is getting spanked.
let me put it this way. Clemson may be the only Clemson's one of the few ACC teams that hasn't lost a game yet, and seeing as how bad the rest of that conference has looked against much worse competition.
Uh-huh.
So I got to say, I haven't seen anything on Clemson either myself, but it seems they seem to be a pretty good team this year.
Okay, well, based on what Podcast said, I'm going to he's ahead of me in the standings here. So I'm going to – Clemson's not going to win the ball game, but I'm going to pick Clemson to cover.
Okay, well, I'm going to go against you here. I'm going to go with Auburn to cover at home. Being game day's there, you got a lot of emotion in the national spotlight. It's kind of got to be a semi-coming-out game for them in a way. And Clemson doesn't have C.J. Spiller and those guys anymore, so they're still reloading, learning, and everything else. Auburn's had a year under their belt with a lot of these guys, so I go with Auburn to cover.
All right, next one, East Carolina travels to winless Virginia Tech.
Oh, boy.
Virginia Tech, you got to come out and beat somebody eventually.
Now, I should somebody should point out, East Carolina has had a very high-powered offense through the last couple of through the first two games. They don't have much of a defense to speak of. You know, they've mostly been shootouts, but East Carolina can hang some points on them. And Virginia Tech looked even worse again. I went back and saw as many highlights as I could of that James Madison game that they lost last weekend, and that it wasn't just a fourth quarter that destroyed them. They were bad all day.
Bearded man, you gonna let me pick the game or what? You gonna chime in after every game you throw
he
out there?
He just thinks that he's ahead in the schedule in the standings right now that he's gonna be ahead at the end of the season.
He has to throw his weight around a little bit. I mean, you didn't let me finish. East Carolina always played. East Carolina and Virginia Tech played. They played each other. This is like the third time they played each other in the last like 5 years. East Carolina always plays Virginia Tech tough, and they're gonna cover the 17.5 points easily. So, how's that, Greg?
Oh, this grabs you, but this is at Virginia Tech. The question is, how does that loss affect Virginia Tech? Does it affect it like they did Michigan a couple years ago, where they just keep going downhill, or do they actually have a little moxie about them and bounce back? To me, this is a pick 'em for me, even with a 17-point spread. I'm going to flip a coin, and I'm going to pull Virginia Tech in this one.
Okay.
All right. Well, fine. Now, presented without comment, number 10, Florida at Tennessee. Florida is a 17.5 point road favorite.
Real quickly, moving along here. Tennessee at home, first big conference game of season for them. I like Tennessee to cover. I don't know if they win the game, but I like Tennessee to cover.
I agree. Tennessee to cover in this one. Dooley does a good job coaching. He'll keep it close.
They didn't do that against Oregon. They kind of lost. That game was tied, and Oregon just 21 points in a matter of minutes. I mean, it was ridiculous.
But Oregon is better than people think.
Oregon's better than Florida, I think, at this point in the season.
Yes.
All right, next one, ACC matchup, Georgia Tech. Georgia Tech lose to, surprisingly. Georgia Tech lost to Kansas this past weekend, and it was a very, very big upset for Turner Gill at Kansas. And North Carolina, in their first game since ours, because they took week two off, there is no spread announced for this game as of yet, because North Carolina has said that they're going to do some rolling suspensions, but they haven't announced who they're going to suspend yet. So,
okay.
Just straight up pick on this one.
It says minus one on the board.
Oh, they must have just released a spread then.
That's still a pick 'em no matter what. I mean, you either push or you win. I mean, it's unless you're picking Georgia Tech. You know, I mean, it's basically. I like North Carolina to come out. They're gonna play with a chip on their shoulder again, regardless of who gets suspended or whatnot. And they showed we've been using the word of the night tonight is moxie. They showed a lot of moxie against us and Georgia Tech. Georgia Tech isn't the team that they've been the last couple of seasons. I like North Carolina.
Yeah, I like Carolina too. They had 2 weeks. They had a week off to prepare for this. They had, you know, to kind of recover, lick their wounds a little bit, Heck yeah, I think North Carolina is going to do it. Plus, it's the first ACC game, so they want to start out conference real well.
Yep, all right. Next one, number 23, Houston travels to UCLA. Houston, known for Case Keenum and that high-powered offense. To the best of my knowledge, they still haven't said whether or not Case Keenum will start. He had a they didn't say concussion, but it did. I watched the game. It sure as hell looked like a concussion to me against UTEP last weekend, although his backup was pretty good. So it's a Houston's a 3.5-point favorite on the road.
Yeah, I think Houston goes UCLA and covers. No, but UCLA is very good, and Houston's got a they've got a good thing going over there right now. They're the next some of them are even the next Boise State, but they're the next mid major to kind of make some hay over the next couple of years. Actually, their window is this year with Case Keenum. I think he's probably going to go pro after this year if he's not a senior already. So I don't know what his grade level is, but I like Houston to go in there and win by more than 3.5.
On going to the West Coast? Well, they'd always wind up playing in probably in one of the little West Coast bowls every year, though. Podcat, question for you, just so I can know a little background here. What is the turf Houston usually plays on?
I watched the game. It looked like they used a grass surface at home.
Okay, so normal grass surface?
Yeah.
Okay, well, then I'll take Houston. That made my determination. I know it's weird, but it's my determination there.
That takes Houston with the grass.
All right.
Yeah.
Next one, Iowa travels to Arizona. Iowa is a 2.5-point favorite on the road. Both teams are undefeated.
Yeah, this is an interesting game. Arizona's been kind of that, you know, Mike Stoops has been there for a few years. It feels like he's got this team playing well. They're 2-0. They're ranked. Iowa's pretty strong again this year. Pretty good team. Arizona in a big game, big non-conference game in their own stadium. You got the traveling factor going on right there. I like Iowa. I like Arizona to pull the upset. I'm going to go Arizona to straight up win on this one.
I'm going to go Arizona, too, and the one reason is because of the heat in Arizona.
Okay.
I think it affects the players coming from that Big Ten. You know, they're used to that little, you know, dreary, cooler weather. I think that heat's going to get to them.
Okay.
All right, next one. Navy, who's 1-1 this year, didn't really look that impressive against Maryland in the opening weekend. Traveled to La Tech. Navy is a 4.5-point favorite on the road.
Real quick, La Tech's in cover.
Yeah. No, I got La Tech.
All right. Next one, Nebraska travels to UW. The Pac-10 title contender this year, of course.
Mm-hmm.
Jake Locker, Heisman counterpart. Nebraska is a 3.5-point favorite on the road. And there were some great comments by Bo Pelini earlier this week. Somebody asked him if he would do anything to prepare the team for the crowd at Washington, and Bo Pelini basically said it's not going to be a factor.
That's fun.
Nice. Now Nebraska got a good team this year. I think they it's going to be them and Oklahoma contending for that Big 12 championship this season. I think they go to Steve Sarkisian still trying to build something there. Jake Locker's a good player, but I think Nebraska is going to shut down the other phases of that offense and win this game going away.
Yeah, Nebraska's got way too much speed for Washington. You know, one player does not make a team, although even though he is a quarterback, the overall speed on defense for Nebraska, yeah. And Nebraska's starting to develop an offense. Nebraska, I think, wins easily too.
Okay, next one is former Big 12 opener, Texas at Texas Tech. Texas is only a 3.5-point favorite on the road.
That's good enough. They're going to cover that 3.5. They're going to win this game by a touchdown. Big Texas.
Yeah, they got something to prove after the performance they put forth against, what was it, Rice? So Texas has to prove that they're a top 3, top 4 team. So they're
not going
to.
I don't think Texas is going to win a lot of ball games this year, and they're not going to be dominating like they have been in the past. So I think it's a close game, but it's not 3.5 points close. It's like 7 to 10 points close.
And Texas Tech is not what the same team that they were in the past either. So
no,
that's why I say
this is Tubby. Tubby's got a chance to prove himself as a coach over there. We'll see what he's got. He's always coached well in big games in the SEC. So we'll see, but I still like Texas.
All right, and finally, the bottom end of the SEC fights itself. Vanderbilt travels to Ole Miss, and Ole Miss is inexplicably a 12-point favorite at home.
Yeah.
They were not impressive at all in their win at Tulane. Mazzoli threw a couple picks too.
Mazzoli's going to play this whole game, though. I mean, He's the quarterback. He's going to play the game.
Yeah. This is Ole Miss. This will be Ole Miss's conference opener, right? Jacksonville State, 2-1.
Yep.
12.5 points. That's a big number for a team that's lost a Division I AA team and only beat a really de facto Division I AA team in Tulane by 14 points. Was it 27-13 Saturday? Was it the final score? I know it was somewhere in that neighborhood. Golly, but Vandy's offense was just – Man.
Yeah, that's my thought. As bad as Ole Miss's defense is, Vandy's offense is that bad, but Ole Miss can put up some points.
Yeah, I could see Ole Miss going to late touchdown to cover the spread. I mean, it looked for a while like we wasn't going to cover the spread Saturday against Vandy, and we just kind of pulled away from them. I kind of see this happening, too, with Ole Miss. I like Ole Miss to win and cover.
Yeah, and I'm thinking the same thing just because how bad Vanderbilt looked. You know, even though our defense was great last weekend, but Vanderbilt just looked, they're just not there. Yeah, I got to say Ole Miss has to do something eventually.
Yeah. What was Cody's quote tonight? It's Vandy.
Yeah, it's Vandy. All right, finally, us, Mississippi State at LSU. We are a 7.5-point favorite at home.
I don't know. Let's pick the game. Let's do score predictions and let's save score predictions for Saturday. Let's just pick the spread here, Pat. We'll tease them with the score prediction on Saturday because I got a good score prediction for this game. I'm going to pick I think LSU wins because I think we're more talented and I think we make enough plays, you know, defensively to hold them. This is going to be a tight game. I just kind of feel it. It's the way LSU season is going to kind of go all year. Theoretically, I can see LSU scoring late to kind of push them above that 7.5-point number, but I am going to pick Mississippi State to cover the 7.5 points.
I'm not. I'm going to pick LSU to win the game and win the game easily, and because they're going to score something on special teams, they're going to score a defensive touchdown, which is definitely going to give them at least 14 ahead of Mississippi State right there. And besides the fact that Mississippi State, we're not sure what color helmet they're going to wear, this really eggs me on. This podcast, by the way, they wore maroon helmets the other night.
I said that earlier.
No, you said that. Podcast said they wore white.
I watched the game. I know they wore maroon.
Well, you said it, but Podcast said they wore white.
Well, Podcast's full of shit. You don't know what he's talking about.
So now I'm picking LSU because of that.
Okay. That sounds like a good reason to pick them. But I picked with my heart all last year when I was picking LSU, and they rarely cover. But I'm picking State to cover. I don't think they're going to win, but I like them. They're going to cover, and we'll give them score prediction.
If it's that close, I'm going to be aggravated.
Well, yeah. I mean, I plan on being aggravated. I plan on being aggravated all year. That's just the way it is. It's LSU football. It's the only thing that feels worse than a loss is a win, you know. So I stole that from my friend Jason Murray. So when Jason listens to the show, I took it from you. That was his Facebook status update the morning after North Carolina. So, yeah, that's just kind of the way it is. It's the way it's been the last 3 years. So we'll see what happens. But I think it'll pretty much close it out for the Go Show. You're gonna hear the show again tomorrow night or Thursday night. Have a podcast edited up. I think it was pretty good, pretty smooth tonight. I think we did a good job. If you want any more insight and analysis beyond listening to this show, you're gonna get game breakdowns all week long. on AndyValleyShow.com. Again, listen for us Saturday morning. Technology, we're missed. Hopefully everything works out. We were able to get online and stream live. I'm looking forward to it. We haven't done that since last year, so be sure to tune in for that. It's going to be 9 a.m., roughly start time, 9 a.m. We shouldn't be too liquored up by then, so until then, and we're going to try to clean up the streaming live shows this year. We're going to try to,
cut the curse into a minimum.
Well, yeah, but we're also, me and Podcast also talk about minimizing the number of mics we hand out to people and kind of going back to three or four guys with kind of Marvin and definitely Chase, no offense, Chase, but kind of Chase just kind of speaking behind us in the peanut gallery instead of giving him a mic and letting him flow as the only he can.
Agreed.
So, Chase, if you listen to this show, sorry, but, which I don't think he will. He's too busy. He's too busy with his job and he's spending his time on his job.
Anyway, let's close this out.
But that being said, let's close it out. Bye bye. Say bye bye, Patrick.
Bye bye, Patrick.
Thanks to Podcast for producing it. He is the Fairport Pimp, the Cajun Billy D. Williams, the man of 1,001 nicknames. Pushing the buttons behind the scenes. For Patrick Morris, I am Kerry Muntz. This has been The Go Show, your original LSU podcast. As always, go Tigers.